MacCast, Wednesday, August 31st, 2011. Hey, Mac Geeks, it's time for your MacCast, the show for Mac Geeks by Mac Geeks. I'm Adam, and this is a show where we discuss all things Macintosh. How you doing? Welcome back to the MacCast. You know, with all the speculation and reporting and stuff that's being written right now about the future of Apple and the potential longevity of their products going forward with Steve Jobs having announced he's stepping down as CEO and going to be no longer at the helm, at least not on a day-to-day basis, running Apple. I wanted to do something for the MacCast related to that, but I really wanted to get a different take and a little bit of a different perspective than what everybody else was sort of doing, which is looking forward, looking at the future, or pondering or wondering about the future of Apple. And as I started to mull this over in my brain and think about it a little bit, I started to think that we might be able to gain a deeper perspective on Apple and its future by looking actually inward and maybe looking to its past, and even more so doing so in a way that I think is very Apple. Apple to me is really about personal experiences and just experiences in general that we have with the products and the technology and stuff like that. And so I thought it would be really great to ask a simple question of a group of people, ask them all the same question, and get the response. And then by looking at or just having those responses in the podcast, we can kind of see where I think Apple is going and what the future of Apple might look like. So I grabbed 11 quick interviews with Apple journalists, podcasters, some creative professionals, and just all of us Apple users and I think fans of the product. I think that's fair to say. And I asked everybody this question: why are you an Apple user? And it's a really simple question, but I think what you're going to see is that there's a lot of varied answers, but within those answers, there's a lot of also common elements and parts and trends that Steve, I think, has carefully woven into the fabric of Apple and can really show us why fans and Apple supporters and just technology supporters in general can rest assured that there's going to be longevity in Apple and in Steve's legacy and in the products and stuff like that. So that's what we're going to get into in this episode. I think it's going to be really great. I'm going to kick it off with myself answering that question, which I had never really thought about. I never really thought, how did I get here? How did I end up hosting a show on Apple and Mac products? Had you asked me 30 years ago, I could have never even predicted it. So I'm going to give you my answer, and then I'm going to give you the answers of 11 other really great people. So before we dive into that, I need to take a quick moment and thank one of my show sponsors, Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. This is an absolutely fabulous product. You know, it's one of those, and I've mentioned this before, that you get the product, you think you're going to use it for one thing, and you suddenly realize that you're opening it up more and more to do different things. So, called Notebook, obviously really great at taking notes, great at organizing thoughts and ideas. You can make lists and things like that. But a lot of its power comes, and a lot of the usefulness comes from when you start to really dig into it and start accessing a lot of features. So you can do audio notations. The indexing and searching, I think, is a key feature. It has this thing called the multidex. So immediately once you start entering in information, it is in the background analyzing that information, pulling bits and pieces out, and building out this index where it's organized in a bunch of different ways. One of my favorite ones is when you throw URLs in there, it keeps track of all the URLs, and you can just go to one page and see all those right there in the index. It has web clippings, which for me is really important because I do a lot of research. I'm in Safari working, and there's a service, and so I can just select a bit of text and have that clipped right into my notebooks. And I can even set those clips up so that they're organized into different categories and stuff like that. And I have different clippings in different areas within my notebooks to accept different bits of information that I want to send there. So it's just truly incredible. And then you add on top of that all the organizing tools like tabs and the ability to put sticky notes and do drawing with great drawing tools and annotating and stuff like that. And it just goes on and on and on. So probably the best thing to do is just go grab a demo. If you haven't tried it before, they have free trials available on the website. They also have a lot more information and some great video tutorials to get you up and running with the program very quickly. So you can find all that information over at circusponies.com. And a big thank you to them for their support of the MacCast. So the question today, the question I'm asking myself and all of my guests is, why are you an Apple user? And when I started to think about this, there was one word that kept coming back into my mind, and that was design. And I think it started for me as a tool for doing design. I wanted to be a graphic designer. I ended up getting into print. I got my degree in graphic communications, which is, you know, printing, specifically with an emphasis on magazine and book design and layout and stuff like that. So through college, I had a Mac. It was a Mac Plus. I was using PageMaker and Illustrator and Photoshop and to do design and create things. And so that was kind of my introduction to the Mac. And you know, prior to that, in high school, I had a little bit of Apple II stuff. We had an Apple II GS. And so I already knew and was familiar with Apple products. But it really, my love for Apple started to come about when I really started using the Mac and was doing this design work. And then later on, when I started working, it became an appreciation for the design of the objects itself. And that really happened around the time that Steve returned to Apple and the first iMac came out, that Bondi blue iMac. And then even more so with the blue and white G3s and then on into the white iBook and the iPods and the Mac minis and all that great stuff that Johnny Ive put out and touched. And that appreciation of just really cool, simple objects and technology that just kind of fits into your life. And then that extended eventually to just the experience itself, the design of the experience, the ease of use that comes with using Apple products and their seamless integration together and the really thoughtful care that goes into creating that user experience that extends, I think, beyond just, you know, the desktop or the operating system. It's a deeper level of understanding of the design of that. And what has become through this process of kind of looking at that and analyzing that, and what seems interesting to me is these are things that, when I think about it, have always been at the core of Apple. They manifest themselves and sort of reveal themselves at different times in different ways and for different reasons. But ultimately, they all are why I think I'm such an Apple fanatic. And it's that term fanatic or addict or sort of evangelist or whatever you want to say gets thrown around a lot when people start talking about Apple fans or Mac users. And the strange thing for me is I don't understand why everyone isn't insisting on being a fanatic, because really we should all want and insist that technology is made in ways that enhance and improve our ability to be creative and to get work done without detracting or distracting from that process. And wanting that shouldn't be thought as being crazy or zealotry. It should really, in my opinion, be expected. So I think this is what kind of Apple gets more than anybody else. And I think it's why the competition is destined to continue to copy and mimic and follow Apple, but will never really gain parity or get that understanding of why this stuff is great. And I think more and more consumers are starting to realize that now, and that's why I think we're seeing Apple grow and rise, and why I think that's going to continue. So that's in essence why I'm an Apple user. Now I'm going to play you the responses from, like I said, 11 other people, and I'm just going to roll these one right after the other. I will introduce each person so you know who is responding to the question, but the question was the same every time. Why are you an Apple user? And so we're going to kick off with Jeff Gamet, Managing Editor at Mac Observer at macobserver.com. Also co-host of Design Tools Weekly and a co-host on the We Have Communicators podcast. And you can find him on Twitter at jgamet.
You know, I don't think anyone's ever asked me that before. Wow. All right. I'm an Apple user because back when I first had easy access to computers on a regular basis, my options were the old teletype computer that was in the high school, and then there was a room with Apple IIs. And so I became comfortable with those computers, learned how to use them, and then was eventually able to get my own Franklin Ace 1000, which was an Apple IIe clone. And so my natural progression from there took me into an Apple IIe GS. And moving from an Apple IIe GS into a Macintosh just seemed appropriate simply because I was already in the whole Apple ecosystem and it was a very easy computer to jump into since the interface between the GS and the Mac was the same. And boy, I'm glad I went down that path because once I got into graphic design, it was a lot easier to get up to speed already knowing how to use the computer that everything else was done on.
Yeah. So kind of a follow-up, what has kind of kept you there? I mean, the technology, you alluded to it a little bit, but technology's changed so much over the years, and there's a lot more options these days. What do you think about it is about Apple, especially for people like yourself who've been with Apple products since the beginning, that kind of keeps us there?
Well, okay. So I was using Windows and DOS along the way as well. And what I found was that my time was really valuable to me. And the extra time that I was having to spend to try and sort out the complexities of MS-DOS and Windows, especially back when we were in the Windows 3.1 days and then getting into the really ugly versions of Windows, which would have been, going up into Windows ME. I just really didn't have time to deal with what I saw as that crap that was just consuming everything that I did. When I could sit down in front of my any of the Apple computers that I've had and just jump in and start working. So I found that from a usability standpoint, the products that Apple was making were far better for the tasks that I needed to accomplish. So it wasn't so much about the whole, dare I say, religious war between mm-hmm. Windows and Mac OS. It was about finding the right tools to accomplish the tasks that I needed to accomplish and then just running with them.
So given all that, what do you think then Steve Jobs' kind of legacy at Apple ends up being?
His legacy is Apple. Mm-hmm. It's not one specific thing at the company. He wanted to make a dent in the universe. And I think he did, because not only did he give us this whole computer platform that has been so useful to so many people, but he's been able to shape the perspective that we have as consumers and as business users of what our technology should do for us. And so now it doesn't matter if you're using a Mac, if you're using an iPad, if you're using an Android tablet, if you're using Windows, we all now have expectations of those devices and how they should work and what they should really be able to do for us. And that's not because that's the natural progression of the technology, although it may have been, who knows, because we have Steve Jobs. Right. So we now have this world where Steve Jobs has said, this is the way our computers should work for us. And that lead that he created is now what everyone else is following. And it doesn't matter what technology company you're working for. At some level, there is a Steve Jobs influence.
John Chambers, host of the 1 Minute Tip podcast at oneminutetip.com and on Twitter at Tipman.
An Apple user. Well, that's an interesting question. So I first saw the Lisa at a computer conference many, many years ago. And I was fascinated by the interface because I was a graphic designer by trade, but I didn't know anything about computers. I didn't really care about computers. I think I had a Timex 1000 or something like that to hello world. But I was not interested in computers. But when I saw the Lisa, it had a graphical user interface where you had folders that you could drop things inside of folders. And you took things out of folders, and to open things, you double-clicked on them. So it was the graphical user interface that really caught my eye. It's like, wait a minute, I don't have to write lines of code, and I don't have to program things. It just works. So I was fascinated by that. And there were two suits at the back of the room. I still remember going, this will never work. People want to program. They want to have complete control over their interface, of their computer. And then when I went to purchase the Macintosh, I remember going into a little computer store around the corner from where I lived at the time. And I went and I said, do you sell Macintoshes in here? And he's like, do you even know what those are programmed in? And I'm like, no, because I'm not interested in that. I want the graphical user interface. So I got one of the very first 128K Macs because of that exact reason, is we have folders and files, and you double click and you drag things into other things. And that's why I was absolutely fascinated by the device. So I like Apple because it was just so easy to use, and it wasn't a programming world. Now I do programming, but in the very beginning, I was the graphic designer trying to learn how to use a computer. And now I have actually made a living. My whole career is based on teaching people how to use computers.
And so over the years, obviously there's been imitators and other systems, and technology has advanced. So what has caused you to kind of stick with Apple?
I guess I'm being the Apple fan. I remember one time filling out, at the bottom of a form, it said, what Apple product do you own, or what Apple products do you own? And I thought about it for a little bit, and then I wrote in all of them because I did. It's like every time something Apple comes out, I buy it, which is, I don't know if it's sad or crazy, but it's like, I so much believe in the products that they make and how they all work together with one another. I'm really not interested in getting other types of devices. Even, I guess, with GPS, I had a Garmin Pilot or something like that? And it was like, well, it was interesting, but it was sealed and couldn't do much with it. Of course, when Garmin came out for the iPhone, I'm like, yeah. And it brought me back to that great, so it, other products put into Apple, which is, again, the fanboy in me.
So is there something that causes that fanboyness, do you think? Like underlying technology?
I think it's consistency. I mean, it's when I'm helping students, because they'll come in sometimes and they'll say, do you know how to, work in this application? And it might be an application they don't use, maybe FormZ or some application. And I really have never used it, but it's interesting because I'll say, well, ask me what the problem is. Let's see if we can figure it out. And there's a way of thinking the way the Mac works and the applications work that I can generally figure out what's wrong, even if I've never even opened the application before. I don't, not to sound like I'm bragging, but it works in a certain way. It's a preference file that might be screwed up. It's a menu item that they might not be able to find. It's a preference, but you know where to look.
Yeah. And so last thing I want to ask you is, with knowing all that, your experiences and your history with Apple and stuff like that and all the great products over the years, how much, if at all, do you think Steve Jobs's influence has had on you being that Apple fan?
I like it. He has such an interesting history. And if the listeners haven't read The Second Coming of Steve Jobs, I mean, everybody needs to read it or listen to it. It's on Audible. And it's such a fascinating story to kind of, you know, coming up through, it's just, it's a neat story. It's a neat technology story, you know, how he got there. So yeah, I wanted to hear what he had to say. I mean, I think I only missed like one or two Macworlds in all of the years they ever had them. And I never missed a keynote. I mean, even when he wasn't there, I mean, I never, but it's just to hear him speak and, you know, it's like great ideas are going to come out of his head, you know, and it was always exciting.
Yeah. So do you think he's imparted himself in a certain way on those technologies that caused you to just want to continue to own all of them?
I don't think it was Steve Jobs per se. I mean, he was the brains and the push and the genius behind all the devices. But I mm-hmm. think that anything that comes out of Apple now and you know in the future, I will be as excited about, because I think he did a great job of, you know, hiring the right people. I mean, as a businessman, he found the geniuses. He found the people who were really, really smart. So I think it's the philosophy of Apple or the being of Apple that will be carrying on, not so much Steve himself, but the people he has found and the technology he's put in place.
Ken Ray, host of macOS Ken and macOS Ken Day 6 at macosken.com, on Twitter at macOS Ken.
That's so funny that you asked me that, because I just did a brand new show with Tom Hesser and Jeff Gamet the other day, all about science fiction. And I've said on Day 6 before, and I think I've probably said on, you know, conversations that you and I have had either for recording or just by ourselves, I'm an Apple user because that gets us as close to Star Trek as anything is going to. And I'm not looking specifically for Star Trek, but when I think about what I want the future to be, the future with a capital F future, not working at MIT, not working at IBM, not working at Xerox PARC, it feels like the closest to the future that I want or that I want to see is Apple products. And I hate to say that, like, you know, all fanboyish, but I mean, they are right now putting together between iCloud, iOS 5, the iOSification of the Mac, if you want to call it that. I'm not a huge fan of that term, but I know it sort of picked up a little traction earlier this year. They're putting together systems. This is why, I mean, you can find faster tablets technically, and you may eventually be able to find lighter tablets technically, although I think those might come from Apple. There are all kinds of things that they're doing that, while they may seem like a pain right now, things like natural scrolling and stuff like that, it feels like we're going further and further into an encompassing or unifying system that I mean, is really geared towards the future, not selling the most widgets. I mean, that said, they like making money. They like doing that stuff. I don't think they're going to start giving everything away tomorrow. But, I mean, I'm literally buying into the future that I think they're laying out for us.
And so for you, what's the appeal of the Star Trek vision of the future that you're talking about?
That's a tougher question, honestly. Mm-hmm. I've been thinking about that a lot lately. Like, I don't know. I don't really know what the appeal of that is, except that it feels like it's a target. It feels like it's something that, you know, has the chance of elevating us all in a way. I mean, technically, as far as what the appeal is, it's the interaction with data. It's the death of Android versus iOS. It's the death of Windows versus Mac. It's more, I mean, it's a phrase that Steve Jobs has used over and over again. And I hate to, you know, just rely on his words, but it just works. And it hasn't gotten there yet, but it feels like with things like iCloud and with iOS 5 and Lion that it's getting closer to that. It feels to me like it's not so much science fiction to think about things like Minority Report, or to think about things like, I mean, the technology from Minority Report, certainly not the, you know, the precogs and all that stuff. But mm-hmm. I mean, just, you know, the idea that your data is just where you are. It's just, you know, and that you're not using a computer. You're not sitting down to a thing. You know, it's. Oh, I sent Adam an email yesterday. Let me pull that up. And it doesn't matter, you know, if I have my iPhone on me or my iPad or my computer or whatever. I mean, it feels to me like this becomes, we live with our data at that point. And data then becomes everything. It's music. It's movies. It's TV shows. It's the podcast that I make or the podcast that you make. It's the email that I sent. It's the story that I write. It's, you know, the drawing that Jeff Gamet sent me that he did last time, you know, he was doing We Have Communicators. I mean, it just, it just something about removing the barriers between us and technology feels like a better thing. It feels like we got distracted over the past 30 years. And by we, I mean, you know, people who are more technically minded than I am. I feel like I'm a news guy. I feel like there are other techies. But it feels like we got distracted over the past 30 years with the machines. And what's happening right now is Apple is, you know, upsetting a lot of people who love the machines, saying, look, this the machine was never the point. We didn't start building cars, you know, for the neatness of having cars. We started building cars to go places, not to use the car truck analogy. That's great. We started building computers to actually, you know, do things with data. And then we sort of got sidetracked into games and into graphics and into, you know, powerful and into bigger and into more. And we sort of lost track of, well, actually what we wanted to do was make our lives easier. We wanted to make everything that we could store elsewhere. We wanted a ubiquity of information. We wanted a ubiquity of data. And then we went down, you know, down this road of bigger monitors, you know, faster hard drives, and all of those things were important to get us where we are. But the thing is, now we have to leave where we are to get to where we originally wanted to go. And that may seem a little, I don't know how that seems, but I mean, that it feels to me like that's what Apple is doing at this point. And I'm fine if somebody else does it too. And if somebody else even does it better, it's just, I mean, everybody else has been chasing Apple's tail. Everybody else has been chasing the, how can I sell more of these? How can I sell faster ones of these? How can I make a sexier looking one of these? And then Apple the whole time has been working on a system, starting years ago when Steve Jobs talked about the Mac being the hub of information in a home. But I mean, you can actually see it happen with iTunes in 2001, as far as, you know, gathering all your stuff, and then the iPod, as far as being able to take all that stuff away, and then the iTunes store, and then, you know, the iPhone, and then, I mean, just on and on and on from that point. I mean, they've been building this system for a very long time by human standards. They've been building the system for a very long time, and it really feels like it's paying off.
So when you're looking at that and you're thinking about that, how much of that do you think is Steve's influence, and how much do you think that is just Apple?
Initially, it was all Steve's influence. I mean, I think. I mean, sure, there may have been other people there talking about it, but the way, the conviction with which he spoke of such things and his willingness to talk about such things. I mean, when it was stupid, I mean, he was talking about a vision for the computer. And when Steve Jobs talks about computers, Steve Jobs talks about Macs. He was talking about a vision for the computer being at the heart of everything in your home at a time when most people thought Apple was down for the count. So, I mean, was the idea his? Probably not. But I'll use a religious term, I guess, evangelism, the level of faith, the level of belief, not only that he had, but that he was able to, you know, engender in everyone else, is a large part of it. Do I think that's still the case? No, I don't think so. I think, you know, for people who are paying attention, both outside of Apple and certainly people inside Apple, I mean, this is, as far as systems go, this is a made thing. It's not complete. It's not done. I'm sure they have other plans that are going to blow people's minds once they finally come out. But I don't think Steve Jobs has to be there on a daily basis. I think whether he laid out the plan or they laid out the plan, the plans are set in motion. I don't think Tim Cook tomorrow is going to say, what we really need to be in is cars, or what we really need to be in is hats. I mean, I don't think anything stupid is going to happen because Steve Jobs is no longer the CEO. And when he's eventually not chairman, and he will eventually not be chairman, again, in human terms, probably sooner rather than later. When he's eventually not chairman, I don't think suddenly Apple, you know, starts buying amusement parks. I mean, I think they've got a plan at this point, guided certainly by Steve Jobs and Steve Jobs' vision. But, you know, I saw some article that said Steve Jobs leaving Apple is a bit like Henry Ford leaving Ford or Walt Disney, you know, passing away. And certainly both of those companies have seen hard times, but both of those companies are still, you know, I mean, they're there. And Disney, in a lot of ways, has much improved and much better and certainly much bigger than it was under Walt Disney's care. So, I mean, yeah, you're in a time of transition, but I mean, I don't think it's time to head for the lifeboats.
Victor Cahiao, host of the Typical Mac User podcast and Typical Shutterbug podcast at typicalmacuser.com, on Twitter at Victor Cahiao.
I was tired. I was tired of having my computer manage me instead of me doing things with my computer. You know, I was a longtime PC user and I was tired. I had a couple of really bad crashes and I was having to just chase after this technology. And, you know, one time I just wanted to throw my PC out the window. I did a show around that subject. You know, literally, I wanted to throw it out the window. It wasn't figuratively. And I was just tired of it. And so I was listening to your show out of a curiosity, Adam. And I really found that you had a community thing going. It was you as a host, certainly, but it was also the people that were contributing and just kind of the flavor. And I thought, well, that's really curious, because I always had this impression of Mac users as being snobs and Mac software as being expensive. I knew the hardware was expensive, but I thought the software was going to be out of bounds too. I just didn't know. And so I just thought, wow, this is the reason that I want to go and try this. And it wasn't long after I got my very first Mac, which was a Mac Mini, that I found the computing experience. You know, I found what I was looking for, not only in the community. Yeah, that was there, and certainly that grew, and that I was probably going to do that anyways, but I found the people receptive to it. But I found the answer to me being a creative person. I have been a musician most of my life. I've always liked the arts. And all of a sudden, I was using the computer like I use a hammer. And I was using it as a tool. I don't mean to hammer things. I was using it as a tool. And that's what I always thought computers should do for me. You know, that it should be serving a purpose. So the purpose became very easy. You know, my creative purpose around podcasting, around music making. When I decided to take up photography, it lent itself to that. So it's just become this, we've grown, and I've grown into it being this system. You know, and I'm a part of it, and it's a part of me, and it's just like a part of my daily life, and frankly, a part of my family's daily life. I mean, it's funny. My wife and I sit in bed, and we both have our Macs, and we both share that, and I've gotten my father-in-law into it, and we were just talking about this the other day, talk about a typical Mac user. My father-in-law is, and Mary asked that question, what he thought would happen after Steve was gone, and he said nothing. They make really good stuff, and I've never used a computer as much as I've used this one. And I thought, yeah, that's it. That's what it is. It becomes a part of what you do. So, yeah, that's how I'm a Mac user. And the people are very cool. And the community is incredible. The friendships that I've made because of being a Mac user and a podcaster. How can I put a price on that? So, like I said, when I heard about Steve's retirement, you know, I said, thanks for making the coolest things in the planet.
So what I'm kind of hearing from you is it was this kind of mixture of the technology and kind of the culture. Do you have a sense of why that's unique to Apple, or why you think that's unique to Apple? I mean, there's a lot of other technologies out there, and there's a lot of other smart companies. Why does Apple have that kind of secret sauce, do you think?
Well, I think the secret sauce is because part of it is their design sense, and literally that they make beautiful things, you know, from a design perspective. And so I think we become attached to those things, you know, from their beauty. And then they just become, you know, things that we carry in our pocket, or things that we, you know, take out at the coffee shop. And so that to me is part of the aesthetic piece of that. And then you combine that with this sense of creation. In other words, if I'm using my Mac to write my next music project, well, guess what? My heart and soul is in my music. And if where I'm storing those zeros and ones is in my Mac, then I'm going to have this relationship with it. Same thing with my pictures, you know? So I think it just becomes that. And yeah, you can do all of that in the PC. But again, for me, it was that I was taking care of it. It was like, oh my goodness. It was like, you know, being ill, you know, and having to just take care of myself all the time just to keep going. I mean, yeah, I did it, but it's not what I wanted to do. I wanted to be more creative, and I thought it was possible with the computer, but I didn't know it was possible in this way. And, you know, I'm a person who uses a PC every day at work still. So I still have this tug of war, you know, that idea with daily.
What do you think about this kind of disappearing of the technology and the technology going away, or you have that technology underlying the thing that you want to do, but it's not really, really there? And I pick this up as a sense of, and where I'm going with this is I'm wondering if, how much of that do you think is kind of Steve Jobs and his vision of technology and stuff like that, or how much of that is actually just Apple as a company?
I think it's hard for me or geeks like us, you know, that are in this so much to kind of separate ourselves, you know, enough to really understand that truly. But where I see it, again, I'm going to go back to my father-in-law and my wife. They're examples of people who I see using these devices the way that Steve is envisioning them. My wife and my father-in-law speak in FaceTime almost every day. We have a very sad situation in our home where my mother-in-law is very sick, and he is alone in the house now. And FaceTime this summer created a relationship between them that I see every night. And he calls her, and it's just like daily. And I say to myself, that the tool is just a way of doing it. It's magic that they get to look at each other's face and talk about whatever he had for lunch. And literally, that's what the conversation is about. But him being able to pick up his iPhone or his Mac and being able to do that, I think that's where the magic comes in, where the device gets out of the way and it starts serving the purpose of what we're trying to accomplish, which, after all, is having relationships with each other and getting closer to our art and getting closer to our humanity or our writing or whatever it is that we want to do to express ourselves. And when the technology starts getting out of the way of that, because of its simplicity, you know, in use, I think that's when you get the kind of uptake that Apple has just, you know, created, and the momentum continues because that vision continues. I think Steve finally has what he wanted when he first started the company, you know, this device that is an appliance that people can use for things like that conversation between my wife and my father-in-law.
J.C. Hutchins, novelist, screenwriter, and transmedia storyteller, who you may know from the Seventh Son novel and podcast, jchutchins.net, on Twitter, at J.C. Hutchins.
I'm an Apple user mostly because, at least initially, I was an Apple user because I was introduced to them at a very early age in grade school. I'm in my mid-30s, and back in the early 1980s, the Apple II and Apple IIe's were the bee's knees, and they were the brand new thing, and our very small school got a dozen of them. It made citywide news in Louisville, Kentucky at the time, and was in the newspaper, our little school, and there I was kind of hunting and pecking away at a computer with an Apple logo on it. As we know, computers were probably prohibitively priced for many people. They certainly were for my family. So I kind of coveted them from afar for many years, including in high school when I was reintroduced to them in a meaningful way when I was taking a journalism class at my high school, learning to write a nonfiction and laying out those nonfiction stories for the student newspaper. And that's when I really kind of grokked the Mac in a meaningful way. Before, you know, with the Apple IIe using BASIC and without the GUI, I felt it didn't feel delightful for me. And I think that my age, you know, being so young at the time, had something to do with that. But being a teenager and revisiting Apple and revisiting the idea of personal computers, because again, my family didn't have one, it really made a profound effect on me. Now, I went into the journalism business, and that's how I started my writing career. And the journalism business was kind of very Mac-friendly, both from a data entry perspective, but mostly a design perspective. And so my fluency with Macintosh increased throughout my college years. And when it was time for me to finally buy my own brand new computer, when I graduated college in like 2000, I sprung for the iMac. I can't imagine using another personal computer, at least for home use. And it goes well beyond years worth of using it and muscle memory. It goes into, it kind of goes deeper than that, where there's something that I've never been able to articulate that's in the DNA, not just of the operating system, but the hardware itself. It's sturdy. It's reliable. It's elegant, and it just feels friendly to me in a way that I have never been able to kind of glean from a Dell or a Toshiba or a Zune. And that's mostly why I'm a Mac user. What brought me there was familiarity, but what kept me here was the respect that the OS and the hardware seemed to have for me.
And do you kind of said that it really eludes you, I think, a little bit, where that actually comes from. I'm curious to get your take. Do you know why have, do you think, other companies, a lot of people have tried to copy what Apple has done. There's a lot of other great technologies out there. They've come along. We've got more graphic user interfaces and stuff like that. What is your sense of what is that element that Apple has that kind of keeps us there, guys like you and me there, but other companies just can't seem to pick up?
Yeah. I think a lot of it has to do with the gateway to the OS. Now, I've used Windows 7, for instance, and I'm very, very impressed with Windows 7. Mm-hmm. What I think it creates a barrier of entry for me isn't the OS anymore. It's the hardware. And frankly, what feels like often the lowest common denominator of parts or design, industrial design, that's kind of used in the hardware. So the gateway to a wonderful OS experience on the Windows side is marred by the view is marred by the broken pane of glass that I have to kind of look through to get there. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And so, I interestingly, as much grief as the Microsoft Zune got, that I think it was called the Zune HD, was just it was an unbelievable product because they took a lot of cues from Apple regarding fit, finish, and quality of kind of design. And I think that's really where that's what Apple understands most, is that, a car can have the best, the fastest, and the most eco-friendly engine in the world, but if you don't feel like somebody when you slide into it, mm-hmm. And maybe even if you don't look like somebody when you slide into it, mm-hmm. You're missing out on a critical element of these luxury items that we have, which are personal computers. That's not a right; it's a privilege. So, that's kind of my thought, is that while there may be parity in many respects, software wise, between what Apple's doing and other developers like Microsoft, I often find that the fit, finish, polish, and kind of physical, tangible experience of working with an Apple product to be effortless and elegant.
Yeah. So the experience goes a long way to making that difference. And so last thing I want to ask you is, what's your sense of that experience? How much of that do you think is crafted by Steve Jobs and part of his legacy, or how much do you think that's just Apple itself?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I'd like to think – frankly, we deify the man, and we, in many respects, oughta, because he's a bona fide genius, and I'll go 10 rounds with anybody who tells me otherwise. I think that he's got kind of like an uncompromising vision of the future that actually does include flying cars, mm-hmm. and wants us to get there, and wants us to get there elegantly and without a lot of fuss and muss in our lives. But I think that the fit, finish, polish, and commitment to excellent experience is probably a part of that company's DNA now. And I think that it's probably kind of in the DNA of the people who are in the right places at that company. It's an uncompromising kind of commitment to the user experience and how a normal person would interact with this stuff, not geeks like you and me, who can tolerate quite a bit of UI fussiness. Mm-hmm. A normal person wouldn't tolerate that. But I think that the DNA of those leaders at Apple was actively reprogrammed by Steve very early on, and he set an example very early on in the company's life cycle, in which it has to have the ubiquity and the reliability of an appliance. Make it happen, simplify it. And I don't think that the Apple products of today would be as simple, deceptively simple to operate and to own as they would have been if he hadn't, for instance, come back in like 97. I don't think that the Apple of today would be the Apple that we know without Steve's uncompromising desire to simplify, simplify, simplify.
Peter Cohen, executive editor at The Loop, loopinsight.com, co-host Angry Mac Bastards podcast, on Twitter at Flarg.
You know, I think I'm hardwired to be an Apple user at this point. My first experience with an Apple product was a Fat Mac back in about 1985. I saw an original 128K Mac at a computer fair at a company called Leading Edge, which made floppy disks and other stuff, storage stuff, near where I lived. And I, up until that point, had a TI-99/4A. If anybody remembers those, you know, this old personal computer from Texas Instruments, and it was color, and it had a cartridge slot and stuff like that. And I decided that I wanted to do bitmap graphics on it. And the only way that I could figure out to do bitmap graphics was to draw on graph paper and then divide that graph paper up into grids and write those grids out as hexadecimal code and enter that as data strings in these simple little basic programs that I did. And I did some pretty sophisticated drawings. I had the Starship Enterprise flying into the atmosphere of a planet during a sunset and stuff like that. It was pretty cool. But it was a lot of work. And I saw this guy playing with Mac Paint at this computer fair and lost my mind. I couldn't believe that you could do that with a computer. And I begged. I begged my mother. You know, Ma, I'll do anything. Please buy this. And, she got one on sale. And I have been an Apple product user ever since then. So that was 1985. And in one way or another, I've made my bones my entire life as a Mac guy or an Apple guy. I, did office support for years, working for temp agencies as sort of the Mac specialist for data entry and, secretarial stuff and stuff like that. Technical support, IT, eventually writing about the Mac full time and, to today. So I just don't know anything else. And I really think that one formative experience hardwired me to use an Apple Macintosh. And I've been using them ever since and don't feel comfortable working with other computers or operating systems. I certainly can, if push comes to shove, work with a Windows 7 computer. I've got Boot Camp installed on most of my machines and can do that, but I'm just hardwired for it.
So what's your sense of why that experience seems to be uniquely Apple? I mean, I hear a lot of people saying the same story. It comes down to a moment or an experience or something like that they had with the Mac. And I don't think you hear that about other types of technology. So do you have a sense of why that's uniquely Apple?
In some ways, I'm kind of reluctant to analyze it too much. Mm-hmm. But it occurs to me that it's just kind of an epiphany that many of us have, and I don't want to sound like I'm waxing philosophical too much about it, or mystical for that matter, but there is a certain amount of that. It's like, remember that rock band that band or that music, that symphony, whatever it was that you heard, maybe when you were like 13 or 14 years old, and you felt something inside you just go, yes, this is it. Or maybe it was the first time you saw your spouse or your significant other, first time you saw your kids, or the first time you saw your favorite pet. We all have these moments in our lives that are epiphanies where you realize that what I'm doing at this moment is important.
And that's how it was for me using the Mac. And computers are such an integral part of our lives. Technology is such an integral part of our life that I don't think it's wrong or abnormal to have that kind of relationship with a box any more than it is with a person or some other kind of living being, or like I said, a type of art or any other really important thing in your life, because you use this stuff all the time. And, you know, we Mac users used to joke about how Windows users, you know, like to use their computers, whereas Mac users like to use their computers to actually do something.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that there's some truth to that. You know, I think Mac users have just figured out that method of interacting with technology is easier for them, is more fulfilling for them, and gets them to the end result of producing what it is that they want, whether it's something as an email or surfing the web, or if it's something a lot more profound like editing a documentary or writing a piece of music or creating a beautiful piece of art. It becomes an extension of what we do and how we do it. And there's that all of us who are really enthusiastic about the technology all share this in common, you know, where we just know that this stuff is the right stuff for us to use to get to this end result.
John Martellaro, senior editor at Mac Observer, macobserver.com, on Twitter at J. Martellaro.
Well, I can give you some history.
Okay.
I started off as a graduate student in physics, and as a summer job, I worked at NASA in Houston, and my job was to evaluate all of the different flight simulators, and there were a bunch of them for emergency operations. So I had to visit every flight simulator. And the big one was really cool. That was the shuttle mission simulator. I got a ride in it, and I watched astronauts Engel and Trulli descend from 100,000 feet down to landing and rollout in the simulator, and I got to sit behind them. And I thought, wow, this is cool. I need to ride a simulator like this myself. So at the time, my options were pretty limited. This was the summer of 77. And I started looking around at what kind of computers could do the job. And what I needed was a computer that could display one screen while I wrote to the other and then flip them so that it looked like an animation. And my options were few. There was the Commodore PET and the Apple II, and there was one other one. It was the TRS-80. And only the Apple II had two high-res screens that you could flip back and forth, so you could display one while you were writing the sky and the runway and the grass to the other. So I bought an Apple II and spent 600 hours with a cassette-based assembler writing the graphics code and then the rest of the flight equations in Microsoft's AppleSoft Basic. And sold it. I started a little company, and I sold it as the Space Shuttle Flight Simulator for the Apple II, and really got heavily involved in Apple at that point. And then I got the idea in 1980 that I should write a magazine. So a bunch of me and some other fellows at White Sands Missile Range, four of us, got together, and we started a magazine called Peelings 2, where we reviewed software. We were the consumer reports for the Apple II. And that kind of was cool. We had a lot of subscribers real quick, and we made some money and had a lot of software sent to us for review and had a great time. So from 1977 to 1984, I was pretty heavily involved in the Apple II. I wrote software for billing the distributors for the magazines that we sent out, and the staff used that. And so I was pretty deep into Apple as a company. And then we got an invite to come out and see the new Apple IIc at Apple because we were a magazine, and so we had this big NDA briefing, and I got to go to Bandley building back when Apple was in that, and you know, you kind of get kind of drawn into the culture of Apple, and then when the magazine was still running, we were able to buy this new computer that changed everything called the Macintosh in 1984, and we were able to buy one for a discount. So I had one sitting next to my Apple II, and like a lot of people, I looked at the Apple II and I looked at the Macintosh, and I went, "Oh, wow, this is the future. The Macintosh is the future." And so I got drawn in even more. So for the last 30 years, I've been up to my ears in Apple and Macintosh.
Right. So you mentioned, I mean, kind of started out as a technological decision, it sounds like, but became something more. Do you have a sense of why you think, I mean, a lot of other technology has come about since then, right? And there's a lot of other options. Do you have a sense of why you've stuck with it?
Well, one is that the machines were just really cool, and you sensed that you were part of the future. All the other computers that were available were sort of yawners. And then when Windows really got going, it turned out to be a massive security problem. There were some years there where my wife just dumped her PCs and wouldn't use one anymore because PCs with Windows 2000 were helpless against assaults from the internet. So, and especially Windows 98, which was a security total nightmare. So, we liked the way Apple did things. We liked their products. We liked the security of them. We liked the visionary company, Steve Jobs. And we just sensed that everything that we know today that is cool about Apple was emerging back in the early days. And we wanted to be part of it. And we had a real affection for the company and its products.
Yeah. Why do you think the products themselves and just the different philosophy, especially now with what's happening with iOS and kind of Apple changing things up again, it seems like we're going through another revolution. Why do you think the competition is just reeling, it seems like?
One of the things I think happens is that executives are not well-trained technically. They emerge because of different values and different talents. And in this technological society, a CEO has to be very astute technically. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, if he decides that he's going to just leave that to other people, you get into turf building and personality conflicts. As a scientist and aerospace engineer with Lockheed Martin for many, many years, White Sands Missile Range, NASA, I saw a situation where non-technical managers are a little bit insecure. They're really good at handling money and contracts and talking to the government, but when it comes to listening to and taking the advice of the senior scientists, they can't give up the authority. So my take is that in earlier days, when I was a lot younger, a manager would come into a meeting, the senior scientist, the PhD, would say, "This is the way it's got to be." And the managers would say, "Yes, marching orders have been issued." Now the manager will sit and listen to the PhD senior scientist who says, "This is how it's got to be." And the CEO says, "We're going to do it my way." And then they get in trouble. So technical reality and facts of the marketplace and understanding consumers and understanding the technology are something that Steve Jobs has been really, really good at. And it takes an exceptionally talented CEO to understand his industry, to understand his customers, to let his smart people run, but also be able to ride herd on them. And that's the unique talent that Steve Jobs has had. You don't see it in other companies, and that's why they're failing.
So that focus on the consumer and that, do you think that is part of Steve Jobs' legacy, or do you think that's part of Apple's legacy?
Well, they're one and the same, aren't they, really? I mean, after all these years, Apple is Steve Jobs and vice versa.
Veronica Belmont, host of Techzilla on Revision 3, revision3.com/Techzilla on Twitter, at Veronica.
Well, aside from the fact that I just love the simplicity of the products, including the iPhone and the iPad, it's kind of an aesthetic thing in a lot of ways. I love the design. I love the ease of use. But I'm also kind of tied into the products at this point. I've built so much of my professional life around, you know, iCal and iTunes and all the integration that works with those products from the computer side that it would be very difficult for me to get out at this point, I think. It doesn't mean I don't like other products out there, but I'm pretty happy with the little universe of Apple products and software that I've built up over the past 5 years or so.
Yeah, so you know, it starts out. I think a lot of us are that way. You know, it starts out as this design aesthetic thing, and we come to love these products. And that lock-in thing, I'm curious to ask you about, because there is a lot of other technology out there. So, you know, you could jump to something else. It might be difficult at this point, but why do you think it is? Why do you think it seems to some degree that's uniquely Apple? Why do you think that is?
Well, I don't know if it's uniquely Apple. I mean, we're definitely seeing two strong leaders in this space in terms of both hardware and ecosystem between Android and Apple. Android has the benefit, but also the downside of having multiple different hardware manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So not all of the software works as elegantly with all the products. That's not to say that it's not good stuff. It just doesn't work the same way across the board on all the different devices. So you have a lot of discrepancy. What I like about Apple and my iPhone and my iPad and my MacBook Pro is that things tend to work very seamlessly together. And when you change to the next iteration of a product, switching over is a snap. It's very easy. So I like that. I like that every 2 or 3 years I update my iPhone, and instead of having to worry about going through a big hullabaloo of getting all my information and data onto the new phone, it's as simple as just plugging it in and, you know, backing up from my most recent update. Or updating from my most recent backup, I should say.
Right. Do you have a sense of why? I guess we talk about hardware and software integration, but it feels to me like there's something deeper going on there in terms of Apple being able to put these products together and create that seamless experience or that sort of consumer experience that other companies can't. Does it feel that way to you too?
Well, yeah. I mean, they go by that statement, you know, it just works and everything just works. It does. Mm-hmm. Not always. I mean, I've had issues with my MacBook Pro. I've had issues with my iPhone, but that's mostly been related to installing early betas of iOS 5 and whatnot.
Right.
That's not really their fault. That's more me just being curious before they're quite ready. But, you know, I've tried to use a few different Android tablets in the past, and things just don't work. Things just don't work the way I want them to. They don't work the way I expect them to. And maybe it's because I've taught myself how to use devices like that in the Apple world. And so when they don't quite work the way I expect them to, I get very frustrated very quickly. But I think that's kind of the way that Apple has wanted it. They've kind of built these products in a way that are very intuitive and very, if you've used an Apple product before, you kind of innately know how to use the product going forward and the next products. There's some kind of simplicity about that that is very comforting in a lot of ways. But yet that's not to say that they're boring or not being innovative, because they are. They just have somehow managed to tap into that part of our psyche that's like, oh, okay, well, it worked this way last time, so maybe it'll work this way this time. And you just kind of know that that's how it's going to happen.
Do you think they have an innately different approach to the vision of technology and the vision of the future than sort of some of the other companies?
Well, at the risk of sounding like a fangirl, it's kind of like they know what we want before we want it. And so when you use a new product for the first time, when you pick up an iPhone for the first time, you're like, oh my gosh, like this is exactly what I was looking for. That's how a lot of Apple fans feel the first time they pick up an Apple product, mm-hmm. or a future Apple fan, I guess I should say. They're like, wow, this is working exactly how I expected it to, or this is the kind of device I was looking for, or I can't believe how simple this is to use. And I think that's what they've kind of tapped into to the market.
Yeah. Do you think that's something that is part of what Steve Jobs has brought to the table, or is that now something that's innately Apple?
Well, in terms of Steve Jobs, I mean, he's definitely kind of the vision man, and I think he has been, obviously, for the past, you know, past decade. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, Apple's not stupid. They've known this whole thing was coming. They have a plan going forward that is going to happen whether or not Steve Jobs is there. Yeah, he may say no to a few things, or he may like change a few factors in products going forward. But I'm pretty sure they have a clear vision of what their timeline looks like, you know, 5, maybe even 10 years from now. So I'm not concerned about the Apple vision or Apple's success going forward.
Scott Johnson, creator of the Frog Pants Studios podcast empire at frogpants.com, on Twitter at Extra Life.
Oh, man. You know, that's a profound question that I will try to answer now. Why am I an Apple fan?
Apple user.
Apple user, better, even better.
It's hard to distinguish the two sometimes,
though. It's true. Why am I an Apple user? It comes down to the Mac, the iPad, just about everything about various models of the Mac, OS X in particular. These things seem to be designed for creative people like me. So when it comes to the best way to create audio or video, it's always been true that the Mac seemed to have the best ways of doing that. The best ways of me being able to move into the digital space when it comes to illustration, cartooning, art in general. It just seems like the tools and the products and the software and the interface and the focus is much stronger on the Mac and always has been. And I spent a lot of time in the PC world, and it was just never quite the same. You could get by and you could get certain tools across the board like Photoshop and Adobe products and that sort of thing. But there's something about the marriage of OS X's design sensibilities and me as a creative content creator that just meshes better, that works better. And so for me, it's that feeling that I'm wearing a glove that was made for me instead of forcing myself to wear a glove that doesn't exactly fit.
Yeah, but it's maybe functional. So you're obviously a creative professional. You've worked in this industry, and Apple has had strong ties to that sort of area. Mm-hmm. But in the last couple of years, consumers have seemed to really kind of been brought into the fold, and we can obviously guess why. But what's your sense of why the consumer appeal?
Well, I think that Apple's always had a notion, or at least I think Steve Jobs has always had the notion that vision's never changed, that it was always for consumers, that it was always an easier interface, that it was always a more approachable culture, even, or, you know, around computers or whatever. I think that was always the plan. It just so happens that is a cohesive, that actually works with creative individuals as well. In other words, we want an approachable platform that is reliable, that is curated in the way that Apple curates hardware. They design it, they build it, they manufacture it, they build software for it, and then they hand it to you and they say, you know, here's this thing that you can do all of these things within, you know, whatever the scope of the machine is designed to do, and it does them really well. And I'm not having to worry about, well, wait, this video card conflicts with something I put in there yesterday, or this new software driver's not jiving with my motherboard BIOS version, or all this other kind of Tom hackery, which, by the way, is great. Some people love that. And I believe that, you know, PCs have a very special place for, you know, people who love to tinker and tweak and mess around. But for me, it's kind of the opposite of that. I just need a thing to work really well. And then I want to be able to have a broad range of creative space to work in. So I just think it happens that vision works well for creative individuals. But that seems to be, there's fears that that's changing a little bit. That as we get into a market that's more about portability and interface style is changing, you know, those of us who've been doing this for a long time have gotten used to the way we've done things. We've gotten used to our mouse and our keyboard interfaces and the way that we use drawing tablets and other ways that we use our Macs and our computers. And Apple's apparent move toward making things like OS X Lion more you know, more consumer friendly or more iOS like, or, you know, moving away from the traditional medium, does give me a little bit of pause, because there's still so much that I want, that I need a Mac Pro Tower for. You know, I feel like the days of that machine are numbered. And I don't know why I feel that way exactly. I think Lion spooked me a little bit. I got it on a notebook and ran it and went, oh, they're really, wow, they're really going down this iOS route, this, all this, you know, gesture functionality with the trackpad and all this stuff. This is all new territory for me in terms of, you know, what I'm used to. And that maybe says more about me than the products. And I just need to move with whatever that flow is. But, they have such a distinct place in the creative fields, be it film or music or audio or visual or, you know, whatever, graphic design. And they have been since day one, since the first Mac. I fear that they'll steer too far from that and leave those people in the lurch. While those people are not mainstream, I would argue that we never have been. So as Apple becomes more and more mainstream, there'll be a desire on their part probably to cater mostly to whatever that mainstream is. And, you know, these niche people like me will end up not having quite the range of tools or quite the attention to those details that we're used to from Apple.
Let me ask you this. Let me maybe see if I can waylay some of those fears and just throw this out there. Do you think that a lot of what's happening, though, is more about extending the philosophy that Apple has always had and trying to further make it so that technology becomes less of a creative barrier to you getting done what you want to get done?
Well, I hope so, because that's really in it. What you just said is really what they have done up to a point. And now the question is, can they keep that going, or convince me that, okay, well, the way I'm doing things now, let's say someone comes to me and commissions an illustration project, a poster for a film they're doing, let's say. And I say, okay, cool. We go through the process of doing it. I send them preliminary sketches. They approve them. All the while I'm doing this via a Wacom tablet connected to a big, you know, tower. And I'm using a lot of power, a lot of RAM, a lot of stuff to make this go well, efficiently, fast. You know, all the quality and resolution and things that I need to achieve are happening all behind the scenes without having to think too much about it. It may be that the future of what Apple does is going to make me or necessitate my changing from what I'm used to for the last, you know, decade into a new space. Maybe that's an iPad 4 that is larger and has a higher resolution screen and a chip in it that's so capable that we're doing this kind of artwork, for example, on tablets, and that's just the way it is. We no longer need all that hardware. I'm really anxious to see those times come, but I just feel like it can be a little too abrupt. Mm-hmm. So Apple's dedication to simplicity and approachable interfaces and functionality and elegant design, that will continue to attract me to their products. I think it just needed to take, it can't be tomorrow. They can't come out and go, you know, whatever the next cat version of OS X is. Okay, all right, well, this doesn't have tablet support anymore. It only works on notebooks, and see you later. If they try to make this transition too quick, I think they'll run into trouble. I mean, the mouse didn't become a dominant input device for quite a while. It became this really awesome novelty at first, and everybody was like, whoa, what the heck? It seemed like the future. But it took companies like Apple to implement them in smart ways, and over time, it made sense to both the PC and the Mac side. As an interesting input device. And now it's really the main thing we use, that and keyboards. To move away from that, which I sense a desire to do on their part, I think is going to take that same kind of care and curation and time. And in that case, I think I'm probably not that worried.
Dave Hamilton, Mac Observer, MacObserver.com, and the Mac Geek Gab podcast on Twitter at Dave Hamilton.
That's a very interesting question. It started because I was an Apple II. Well, it started as me being an Apple II user, but the reason that happened was, gosh, let's see. I got to get these facts right. I'm a geek, so let's get that out of the way first.
Right.
When I was a kid, I went to computer camp in the summer, and they had, and
again, I'm trying to put these events in order, so bear with me here. But they had, it was mostly on Commodore PET computers, and we learned to program in Logo and this, that, and the other thing. But I was pretty good at it, so I kind of got ahead of the teachers at this camp, but I still loved going. And so they had one Apple II in, it was an Apple IIe in the room, like off of where everyone else was. And so I spent most of computer camp in there on this Apple IIe kind of learning and playing. And then one of my grandfathers also, he had an Apple II Plus. And in the evenings, maybe one or two evenings a month, I'd go over there. Maybe my dad had some grocery shopping to do, so he would drop me off. And I would play on this Apple II Plus. And then finally, we got an Apple IIc at home. But by that point, I was firmly entrenched as an Apple user. I already had a box of discs with all the software that I liked and all that stuff. I mean, I was ready to go. So it was more a matter of circumstance why I headed down the Apple path. But what's interesting is even as I was heading down that path, I vividly remember having someone ask me, if money were no object, what computer would you buy? And at that point, my answer was, oh, well, an IBM PC-AT, because that's the fastest computer that's out there and definitely, you know, the best thing. But that was it. It was based solely on the specs, right? Mm-hmm. But I never actually went and got one of those, nor did I really ever actually want one. There was probably a period of time where I wanted a Commodore 64 because all my friends had them and they were really good with games. But that just began my path of getting used to the Apple as being kind of the underdog, maybe is the wrong term, but you know, not the industry standard, right? I mean, but I certainly had friends who had Apple IIs and had them long before I did. So yeah, somewhere in there, I think it was probably computer camp was the thing that sort of nudged me toward the Apple IIe, and then obviously, you know, from there on it went.
Well, yeah. So let's talk about from there on it went, because I think it's a very similar story to a lot of us, you know, and it was kind of access to the technology, and Apple was kind of one of those first ones where you could really get in your home. So I think a lot of people either through school or through a camp or through a friend or somebody had exposure to an Apple II, but you know, obviously technology changes and advances. And so do you remember when you transitioned to Macintosh, and you know, why stick with Apple through all the different types of technology?
Yeah, I definitely remember the Mac thing. The first time I saw a Mac was actually at my podcasting co-host's house, John Braun. He was working for, I forget which company, it doesn't matter. He's a couple years older than me, and he was in college or something and had some internship somewhere where they had a Mac. And of course, he also had an Apple IIe, and that's how he and I met. But we would get together at night, you know, I'd go to his house, he'd come to my house, whatever it was, and we'd bring our software with each other and trade software and do all these things we probably shouldn't have been doing. But it's what taught us how to do what we do today. And one time I remember he said, oh, look, I brought home this Mac. And it was, you know, I think it was a Mac Plus. I mean, it was one of them in the, you know, in the carry all bag kind of thing. And so we played around with it. It was like, wow, this is really cool. And you know, we did a lot of stuff with it. And for some reason that convinced me, that was like, oh, this is like the pro version of the Apple II. Okay, this is what I need when I go off to college. And so I started college in 1989, I guess, right? And so in March of that year, before I graduated, we bought an SE30 for me to take to college with me. And so an SE30 was the first Mac that I owned, and obviously went on from there. But that was a great machine. I really liked that SE30. That was an excellent computer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, those things were awesome.
Yeah.
So with what's been happening, you know, more recently with Apple's changes and stuff like that, because, you know, you're telling this story of we start out in the Apple II is all about, I think, for a lot of us, learning programming and the technology and the nitty gritty. And then the Macintosh
right.
comes out and it adds a layer of, well, no, this is more toward that appliance direction. And then there's this longstanding story that was always kind of Steve Jobs' vision. So now with the products and Apple products that you're using now, I mean, what's your sense of just Apple's direction now moving forward? I mean, are they continuing down a certain path of obscuring the technology, or is it still about tech?
You know, what's interesting is that SE30 felt more like an appliance to me than my brand new, you know, Core i7 iMac feels today.
Right.
And the reason is System 6, which is what came on my SE30 versus Mac OS 10. Once I got into computers, I obviously got a modem and started dialing out and really learned to use Unix. This is going to sound strange because I'm pretty darn good with Unix. But all that started with me being dialing up to these Unix systems. And of course, on the Apple II, I had access to the DOS command prompt, right? And I did a lot of work with IBMs at the time too, and so I was used to the IBM DOS command prompt. You know, it wasn't the same DOS on the Apple II. But that may not be obvious to all your listeners, so it's good to delineate. It was not the same thing, but it was similar. And Unix was, you know, similar to that too. Just yet another command prompt with its own variation on the commands and the syntax. But once I got a Mac, there was none of that. I mean, literally, there was none of that. Right now, it's obscured, but it's there, you know, and you can easily get there. But on the Mac, that just didn't exist. It was all graphical. The only way you could interact with the thing was using the graphical user interface. You couldn't drop down to the assembler or anything like that. So it did feel kind of limiting, but it also had these great graphics and the mouse. I mean, it was so much faster than what I was used to, and it was so cool. That I stuck with it, obviously. As far as the direction they're going with it, I think. I mean, I think the goal, and they've realized this in many ways, is to make these things more of an appliance. Again, I'm a geek. I know how to get down deeper into it, and I choose to do that. But I certainly don't have to, and that's the beauty of it.
Yeah, I guess what I'm wondering about and would be interested to find your observations on is just, you know, it seems like... Well, Steve Jobs calls it the post-PC era, right? We're entering, according to Apple and Steve, the post-PC era. And Apple is kind of taking off in the consumer space. And it seems like a lot of their competitors who they've kind of been fighting against to gain market share are suddenly, it's like Apple's been able to change the game. So what's your perspective on that? And what does it look like moving forward for Apple?
I think... What Jobs said about the iPad becoming more commonplace, or tablets in general becoming more commonplace, is probably true. Most of us, myself included, most of the time, an iPad is all that I need, and in fact is often the perfect thing for me because it's not clunky. It does what I need it to do. I can check my email. I can surf the web. I can buy things. I can do everything, most everything I want. And, you know, his analogy to making computers like become more and more like trucks. They're utility vehicles. They are the things that some people need, but not everybody needs. And I think that's definitely going to happen. I mean, it's, you know, you have an iPad, and my guess is a lot of your listeners do too, and have experienced the same thing where it's just great. I have a device. It's an appliance. I can do what I want on it. And then I just put it away and it's just gone. And I don't have to think a whole lot about it.
Bart Bouchatz, the International Mac Podcast at impodcast.tv. On Twitter, at B Bouchatz.
The main reason I'm a Mac user is because I can get more done with less effort. It's interesting that you're asking this question now, because it's something I've been thinking about a lot, because I've been asked it by a few people now. And I just find there's so much less resistance from the operating system to getting stuff done when I'm on a Mac than when I'm on Windows or Linux. Linux has the power to do anything, assuming you have infinite time to configure it in the infinitely many ways it can be configured, and Windows just has no power. So I guess I'm a Unix sysadmin by day, and the fact that OS X is a full Unix is a very big deal for me. But the user-friendliness of it all, and the fact that it's gone beyond the sort of the simple one desktop thing where you're into... You know, well, I was always a heavy Spaces user, but in Lion, I think everyone is getting into that sense of having multiple desktops and stuff. So when you're doing, you know, 50 different windows at a time, one desktop is just not a viable way to work. You need to be able to segment, you know, the different mental tasks you're doing should be different places, and the Mac just makes all that easy. And the amount of built-in stuff that you just don't have to worry about, you know, backups, it's a headache on Windows. On the Mac, you just plug in a drive and click OK, and you're done. you know, there's just lots of these little features that I just absolutely couldn't live without. I like to customize and automate things. And the fact that Automator lets me tie into Unix level stuff through the GUI so that I can tie keystrokes to repetitive tasks I do often, or have them show up in the services menu or appear in the right click menu when I right click on a file, they just allow me to get so much more done with so much less effort. It's the path of least resistance for me, I think. And it's pretty. Pretty's good too.
So, I mean, you obviously are a technical user. You know the ins and outs of operating systems, and you know how to do stuff. So, why did you end up at that path of least resistance?
Well, I got here by accident, will be the honest answer. I had been a Linux desktop user, and I was mostly happy, but it was a case of if ever I lost my home folder and I had to reconfigure it from scratch, I think I would have gone mad. But I took on work as we call it a postgraduate student in Ireland. I think you guys, I'm trying to remember what name is used in the States, but after you graduate, you go on to do like research work and stuff, and you end up with a master's or a PhD. I think you just call them grad students, but we call them postgrads. Yeah. And my, what we call supervisor, I think you guys call advisor, was a strong Mac user, and he felt that his budget was not going to be spent on rubbish computers, and he basically said, if you want a new computer, you're getting a Mac. And that was in the days of the Emacs, when they looked like big televisions. Mm-hmm. And I was just given an Emac, which was running the latest and greatest thing, which was 10.3, which I think was Panther. Or I don't remember which cat it was, but it's not important. And within, you know, for the first half hour, it was like, this is all a bit different. And then within 3 or 4 days, I was hooked. And I was like, okay, I'm not changing. And then very shortly after, I think it was 6 months after or something, Steve Jobs stood up at Macworld in January and debuted the Mac Mini and the bring-your-own-keyboard idea, which was absolutely perfect for me as a longtime PC user. I basically took out the big box and put in the little teeny Apple box, and I just never looked back.
Yeah. So with all the changes that have happened recently, you know, Apple's taken the operating system and taken this concept of, you know, not having to hassle with your computer, and obviously applied it in other areas and moving into the consumer space. You know, what's your sense of the direction Apple's moving in, and what are your thoughts on that?
Well, something I've been thinking about a lot, actually. Your timing is great on these questions. I actually wrote a long blog post with this where I think we're heading for what I call the Star Trek future, where Apple have a device with a form factor to fit every possible need, and your data is just going to magically exist on them all. They're all going to be better at different things. So the Mac will continue to be a very powerful machine. The iPhone will continue to be a very simplified interface. But things you learn in one will help you in the other. So the same UI ideas and concepts and cues will follow you across all of the Mac operating systems. So you sit down in front of anything Apple makes and you'll feel at home, whether it be a desktop, a pad, a phone, or goodness knows what else is coming out.
And do you get a sense, it's funny that you mentioned that metaphor because somebody else mentioned that, but do you get a sense of that is a vision that was purely Steve's, or is that something that is just inherently Apple or comes about because of the way Apple sort of is built and does things?
I think it falls out of the sort of the Apple ideal, which is, you know, user first and technology to serve the user. And I think you couldn't possibly think it was more user friendly to have to learn something new for every single different form factor. I don't think that could possibly be seen as the most user-friendly way. So I think Apple would naturally fall back to the place where everything's as easy as possible, so by being unified without sort of crippling anything.
So there you go. A bunch of really great answers as to why we are Apple users. And again, I think if you just listen to those answers and listen to the responses, there's a lot of common threads there. There's also a lot of variation, but underneath it all is, I think, the answer and the secret to the success and what I believe to be the continued success of Apple and their products. And I think we have many years to come of really, really great Apple stuff. So I, again, looking back and looking sort of introspectively at ourselves and the users of the products, I think that's the answer to the longevity of the company. So now we're going to pose the question to you. Why are you an Apple user? I want you to send me your audio responses, and I'm hoping to do a follow-up episode to this episode with your answers to that question. So what I need is an audio comment no longer than 5 minutes. I'm not going to accept anything over 5 minutes. And if you send that in, it may end up in a future follow-up episode of the MacCast. So I look forward to receiving those from you. That's going to do it for today. Before I leave you, I do want to thank all of my show sponsors, Phoronix, makers of Deep Freeze. You can get more information and details on the product over at Phoronix.com. Circus Ponies, makers of Notebook. You can get a free trial as well as more information over at CircusPonies.com. Smile, they make Text Expander, PDF Pen, Disk Label. You can check out all their products and get more information along with demos over at SmileSoftware.com. And FreshBooks, the online invoicing service that's easy to use and gets you paid faster. FreshBooks.com. And a big thank you to all of my sponsors for their support of the MacCast. Big thank you to you. Remember, send in those audio comments, answers to the question on why you are an Apple user. You can send those to MacCast@gmail.com, or you can call in on the listener hotline. That's at 281-622-4269, 281-MAC-IM-9. Please leave your email address if you leave a voicemail. And also, be sure to check out the MacCast website. There you'll find show notes with links to anything I talked about on this or any other episode of the MacCast. And you can also follow me on Twitter, twitter.com/MacCast, or over on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacCast. That'll do it for today. Until next time, I will talk to you all again real soon.